Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello, welcome to Tribe Super, your go-to Middlesbrough FC podcast. We're back for another episode. Although I'm starting to feel like we might be some sort of curse on Middlesbrough. Obviously, before our extended break, they weren't on the best of run of form. Warnock had gone, Wilder had come in. And then we return after, what was it, Craig? 10, 11 weeks of fantastic performances and results. We're back for our second episode. And it's on the back of a defeat, 1-0 to Blackburn. But maybe it doesn't tell the full story because like Gallagher scored the winner. Borough had been on top, really, or the better side.
Just before the winner, yes. In terms of the start of the second half, better than what they played in the first half. But it didn't take much, to be honest. The first half was as bad at 45 minutes, I think, I've seen of Borough since Chris Wilder came. It was a really bad first half. One thing that this Borough side under Chris Wilder have had is kind of, control of possession, and they've looked to try and do things and be positive and play the ball around, on the deck. And there was just none of that in the first half. Last night, no control of the ball, no kind of intent or intensity to the play. As you say, before Blackburn got the goal, they did have a bright kind of 20-minute spell in the start of the second half. But even then, the final ball was lacking. They didn't really test the Blackburn goalkeeper much at all. As Wilder said after the goal that Blackburn scored, the winner through Sam Gallagher, which came about through Paddy McNair, usually so reliable, but he went and made a clearance and completely, air kick, completely missed the ball. It falls to Gallagher and he puts the ball away in the back of the net. And, Wilder said after that summed up Borough's night, really. Poor sloppy goal to give away.
If you can't hear any noise in the background for those listening later on the podcast, because we are doing this live on Facebook as well, Craig is in a service station. So we brought our love of chatter of service stations that usually happens at the end of the episode. We brought it into the full episode, and Craig is currently sitting in a service station somewhere in Cumbria. Dom, I guess the important bit here is how Blackburn bounce back from this, because you're gonna get the second defeat, so it was always likely to happen at some point. It's just about the reaction now.
Yeah, there was always going to be bumps in the road. Wilder's made that point a few times. You're not going to win every week. It is how you react. It was just a bit flat, wasn't it? But I thought Blackburn were okay, but nothing special, which kind of added to the frustration. They were obviously without Ben Brereton and Diaz. So it did feel a little bit like an opportunity missed. It felt to me like a 0-0 game with one lapse of concentration and a good finish from Gallagher. I'd seen Lumley getting a bit of stick, but I don't think you can point the finger of blame. I don't think he's the most reliable goalkeeper Borough have had, but I don't think he did anything wrong last night. And I don't think you can point the finger of blame at him for the goal. At all. It's a swing of the boot from McNair. Jones, it was a bit of a swing, wasn't it? Maybe a lack of composure in clearing the ball initially. But Gallagher's finish was a good one. I fancied Borough to mount a bit more of a push late on. Even when Blackburn went in front, I still fancied Borough to come from behind. I thought they'd get a chance. And obviously, Connolly, that was a real lack of composure, I thought, when he blazed that over, because that was a real opportunity. But as you say, you weren't going to win every game between now and the end of the season. These setbacks were going to come. What's that, 9 wins in 12 for Blackburn? Absolutely no disgrace in losing to them. And it made me think of something that Woodgate said, that Mowbray had said to him when Borough went to Blackburn in Mowbray's season. And Mowbray's advice to Woodgate had been after the game, I know you want to play a certain way, but you have to find a way to win games. That is ultimately the crux of the job as a manager. You have to find a way to win games. And Blackburn are doing that. Fair play to them last night without the best player on the back of their own setback against Hull. They found a way to win. And I think Borough will bounce back, because the only real setback, you know, the last setback was obviously Preston. And you know, we know that Chris Wilder absolutely says it straight, says it as it is, and he did last night, as he did after that Preston game when he talked about the arrogance. And the reaction from that was for me, the best performance we've seen so far under Wilder, Huddersfield away, or certainly one of them. There's a lot of competition now. So I think Borough will bounce back and beat Coventry on Saturday.
Question there for you, Craig, from Prunab. He says, is the loss a blip, or shall we fall off like earlier in the season? What do you think is different this time that will give the fans more hope that it is just a blip?
It's an interesting question, and you know, incidentally, you know, it was a year ago exactly the day that Borough lost to Blackburn last season as well, 24th of January, you know, that kind of loss, that one at the Riverside when Dale Fry got the horror eye injury, that was you know, what Neil Warnock, the previous manager, kind of put down to Borough's season last season, just completely derailing and you know, falling off in the way that it did. So this time, what's different? What will make sure this isn't the same kind of derailment and the same, you know, kind of fall away? Well, I think ultimately it's the standards. You know, you saw in the reaction from Chris Wilder last night, he was really, really unhappy, you know, bordering on raging with that performance. And as Dom said, you know, you're away at a team that's just gone second in the league with that win. And you were one error at the back away from taking a point, which I think, you know, wouldn't have changed the fact that, as I spoke about it, you know, it was a bad performance and there were a lot of negatives to it. It wouldn't change that, but still, a point away at Blackburn has got to be considered a credible point. So, you know, despite that, he came into the press conference and he made no kind of, you know, no spin on it or anything. That was nowhere near the standards that he is setting. And I think ultimately, you know, we forget that this was just Chris Wilder's 11th game in charge of Borough. It's gone so well so far that, you know, it's easy to forget that. And actually, you know, the players are still learning, you know, the way, what he wants and exactly how he wants it. And equally, he's still learning a lot about particular players. And why do I think, or why am I optimistic it will be different and this won't be a blip? I think it's because, you know, there's clearly a long-term project in place at Borough, even if there is short-term success to go after. And ultimately, those players now will know, and it will be drilled into them that, you know, they do need to show their character now. They do need to show their mettle, because, you know, if not, then they're just not going to have a future at this football club, because Chris Wilder won't take anything but the highest of standards.
What I like about Wilder, often with managers, we've all had him, haven't we, where a manager comes into a press conference afterwards and isn't overly critical, and you think, that can't have been the message in the dressing room. You know, there's been times where a manager's come in, and it happened a few times under Warnock, where, you know, you've gone pretty strong in a match report. Then the manager comes in and says, oh, you know, I was pleased with this, I was pleased with that, I thought we were unlucky. And you second guess yourself. You think, have I gone a bit over the top there? When in actual fact, you know that they're just coming out to protect the players or to move it on or to, you know, to change the narrative. And behind closed doors in the dressing room, the message will have been completely different. Now, obviously not all the time, because there's certain things that will always stay in a dressing room. But I do get the impression with Wilder that to a certain extent, the flavour of the message to the players is the same flavour of the message that is given to us and through us, the fans, because he talks about it again and again and again, doesn't he? The fans just deserve to know exactly what's going on and to hear it straight. I remember a few times at Sheffield United when they were going really well in the promotion season in the Premier League, first Premier League season, listening or reading his post-match press conferences and thinking like, what? You know, you don't see or hear that much from a manager. And he more often than not, he got a reaction. Now, obviously, we won't know until Saturday, but I suspect he'll get the reaction he wants. And I quite like the fact that he just says it as it is.
And, you know, the ironic thing about what you're saying there, Dom, as well, is after the game yesterday, it was the complete opposite of what you're saying there about how often you'll kind of write a match report and then the manager will come in and kind of defend the players and you second guess yourself. It was the complete opposite last night in that, you know, I was there with Scott Wilson from the Northern Echo and we were kind of sat thinking, you know, we could both appreciate it was a poor performance and we spoke about why it was a poor performance. But as I say, you were only one error away from taking a point away from Ewood Park. There were better parts of the game, I thought, reasonably well defensively. Joe Lumley had very little to do that was anything but comfortable, I thought, last night. And that was kind of, we were sat waiting for Chris Wilder in the press conference room and the quotes from Sky Sports started coming through, which he did first. He did the broadcast interviews first. And we could see from there, you know, just how upset he was and how angry he was at the performance. And that was kind of one of the first, like Scott asked, the first question in the press conference and said, like, you know, we've seen what you've said to Sky. We're a bit surprised at that. And his answer was just, well, you know, I respect your opinion and I hope you expect mine. That was nowhere near good enough. And it's those standards that we talk about. His standards are so high. And as I say, ultimately, for Borough players now, they have to react because in the long run, if they're not meeting those standards, then, you know, they're going to have to leave the club and find somewhere else. And players who will meet the standards will come in.
I'm sure that's something that the fans will applaud, that kind of honesty and kind of raw emotion. We've got plenty of people watching this live broadcast on Facebook, so I'll dive into some of the questions. I'll come to you first, Dom. There's a lot about Connolly and where he fits in. So we'll start with... where shall we start with? We'll start with this one here from Richard Atwood. He says, is Connolly worth the start or a Coburn?
I don't think he's worth the start over Watmore, based on what we've seen so far. Coburn, you know, it's a work in progress for Coburn, isn't it? No one's expecting too much too soon. You know, he might even go out on loan, mightn't he, before the month is out, depending on what happens. But I do feel slightly sorry for Duncan Watmore. Now, it's worth pointing out here, I think, that Watmore does obviously have to manage his knee, and I think it was the Blackpool game, was it, when Ornel Hernandez played up front and Watmore came on. And in the COVID week, Wilder talked a lot about one player who isn't fit to start at the minute, but he can come on and play because he's having a managing issue. Now, I read into that, and I might be wrong, but I read into that that it was Watmore. So it might be that you know, he's just having to manage his way through. This is his first kind of full pre-season and season for a little while, isn't it? So he's just having to manage his way through that. But I do feel, that aside, I think everything we saw from Watmore in the early weeks of Wilder and his energy and positivity up front was kind of key to making the system work, really. Craig, there was a home game where he came off the bench, and sorry, I can't think which game it was off the top of my head, but he came off the bench and he changed it. Was it Forrest? It was Forrest when Forrest got the goal. Or we're pushing, sorry, at 1-0, I think he came off the bench. Double check this, sorry if I'm wrong. But at 1-0 up, Watmore came off the bench. And at that point, Forrest was starting to push and Borough was sitting a bit deeper and you thought, uh-oh. And Watmore provided that positivity and energy and got Borough back on the front foot. Now, obviously, after that, the schedule was managed a bit more. But just based on what I've seen, I think it's slightly harsh on Watmore to not be playing and for Connolly to go straight in. Now, obviously, it's always worth pointing out that we don't see what goes on day in, day out. And I suspect, given how much we know Wilder rates Balogun, that when he is fully up to speed, we might see Balogun up. But I think it's worth pointing out here as well. You know, is Sparara nailed on starter? Because I thought he was poor last night. I thought he was really poor. I thought he was anonymous, in fact. And because he had that I like Sparrow, but because he had that spell and because he's got a great chant, I don't think he's a nailed, you know, he should be a nailed on starter up there. I think it's absolutely four for two places. And I say four because I think at the minute Coburn probably isn't in contention to start games. And we know if Piezu is available to leave. So I think it'll be interesting how the battle for forward places played out, but I don't think Connolly or Sparrow did themselves any great favours last night. I don't think either could have any complaints if they were dropped for the weekend.
Is Craig coming in there to add anything, or should I dive into a few more of the questions?
Well, I can come in. Yeah, I mean, I think Dom's spot on. I think both Connolly and Sparrow, you know, did themselves a little justice last night. In fairness to Connolly, you know, for certainly the first 45 minutes of his debut, he looked really bright. And you know, there was you know, a couple of good chances that he had in that game, none of which were like last night's, where you would say that's a terrible miss. But certainly I thought he was unlucky not to end his debut against Redden last weekend with a goal. And as I say, looked really bright in that one. So I don't think we should be, you know, panicking or anything like that about him just yet. I think, you know, we have to appreciate that he hasn't played a lot of football in the last 12 months and he is still going to be getting up to a bit of speed, etc. You know, I think as well, you know, don't get me wrong, Sparrow and Connolly were both poor last night. They didn't offer an awful lot when the ball did go towards them. Connolly, you know, once or twice was really frustrating because, see, the ball kept coming back to Burrow's defence, which is something we saw a lot under Neil Warnock. And, you know, I wonder if that, you know, kind of played its part in Paddy McNair's error. Because we saw that a lot under Warnock, didn't we? He used to tear his hair out about the sloppiness of the goals Burrow would concede. And a lot of that, I always felt, was that they never really had much control of possession in the game, so the ball was just constantly coming back, and it was that constant under pressure that they maybe just wilted far too often, and that's where the sloppy goals came in. And that was the same as last night, and while, you know, there was times Connolly, as I say, frustrated because he could have taken a touch and he could have given Burrow a bit more kind of control or authority on the ball, he would try the fancy flick. And it just didn't come off for him at all last night. It was really frustrating. But neither were helped either by the way Burrow played. They went long far too often. That was the strange thing for me to see. And, you know, clearly that was because they invited Blackburn's press on. They didn't, certainly from the back and in the midfield, play them quick enough with as much intensity as what they have been. And as such, they went long far too often. And I think that's what, more than anything, frustrated Chris Wilder. He talks about attitude and game plan and mentality. And I think that would have been very frustrating for Chris Wilder to see, because it was almost like a panicking when it wasn't working, not sticking to the game plan and reverting to, if you like, type and what they were used to, which is going long. And unfortunately, you know, in Sparrow and Connolly, or even Watmore and Balogun are off the bench, you know, they don't have the strikers to play that style. People say, you know, Coburn would have been the big striker, or Biguchi would have been good to have as a focal point, because, you know, Blackburn's defenders were huge. The big guys at the back for Blackburn, and they were always going to beat Burrow's defenders all night airily, but it's no good having, you know, Big Uchi as a focal point up top when that's not the way Chris Wilder wants to play. And say we talk about the project, and Chris Wilder wants to get this project right at Middlesbrough, and that is comes with a consistency, and he's quite clear in his approach and how he wants to see Middlesbrough play. So while, you know, I can understand people saying we needed a focal point up top, that's not how Chris Wilder wanted to play, and ultimately they looked like they needed a focal point because of the way that the service that they provided to the strikers. But in the grand scheme of things, that isn't the service that Chris Wilder wants Middlesbrough to provide the strikers.
I remember reading, just quickly to jump in, I might have talked about this previously on the pod. I can't remember whether I mentioned it last week. So if I did, apologies to repeat myself. But I remember reading something with Guardiola once, where he was saying about you know, the plan B, are you ever tempted to go long in the last 2 or 3 minutes? And his argument was and still is, obviously, if I spend all week or every day on the training ground preaching to the players that I want to play this way, this is the best way to play, this is how we're going to break teams down and beat them, what message does it send out if in the last minute when we're most in need of a goal, I then say to the players, actually, scratch what I've been saying. We're gonna launch it into the box. We're going to launch it long and play for knockdown. I guess it's when you and I completely get the plan B argument. I'm just putting that point forward because you see all the teams do it, don't they? A vast majority of teams will, in the last minute, kind of, you know, get the big men forward or move the centre half forward, knock it long. Maybe not so much as we used to. But there is that argument, isn't there, that this is what I'm saying. Now, this is the way I want us to play. Now, if I'm saying we want to play that in the first minute or the fifth minute or the 10th minute, and if that's the best way to go, why should that change in the 90th minute or the 95th minute? When you're most under pressure, stick to what you know, stick to what you're working on the training pitch day in, day out. So I completely get the plan B argument. And, you know, you look at that last night and think, well, you know, if Uche is going on and causing havoc, or Coburn a little bit earlier and causing havoc. But on the other hand, I completely get the other argument as well.
You know, it's a valid point. We've had quite a few comments saying, can we turn down that horrible music? Unfortunately, we have no control over that. So you'll have to write to motorway services. But trust me, if Craig Johns was in control of the playlist, it would be a heck of a lot worse. So count your blessings.
What have you been listening to on the way home, Craig?
I'm a podcaster, actually, drive home. Enough. So, yeah, I'm listening to Paradise Crime Series, which I think you actually recommended to me.
I did. At least it's not James Blunt, eh? we've been talking about strikers, and a few people have said in the comments here that they feel that Middlesbrough need to get a striker in. Ian, Andrew Taylor, saying it simply, we need to get a proven striker in. Looking ahead to this final few days of the transfer window, Craig, do you feel Middlesbrough will go out and target another striker, or do you think that's them done for players up top?
Yeah, absolutely done. I mean, they've got, they've brought in Aaron Connolly and they've brought in Fanarin Balogun. Let's see, I think, Watmore and Sparrow haven't been prolific goal scorers in the first half of the season, but they've certainly both had bright moments. And, you know, Fanarin Balogun and Aaron Connolly, while, you know, neither have played a lot of football recently and will have to kind of get themselves up to speed, they both came in early enough in January where they'll be able to do that in good time, unlike last year when, you know, the signings that Borough made, which could have impacted the season, they happened too late in the window. And by the time the likes of Bolasie and Cabano were up to speed, it was March and the season was already slipping away from Borough. That's not the case this season. They've got, you know, I think I'm still intrigued, quite excited to see what Connolly and Balogun can do when they do fully get up to speed. And like I say, I mentioned it earlier, I don't think there's any need to panic whatsoever about Connolly, because he's, you know, had a bit of a bad game there last night, because he was really positive against Redden. It was a good performance against Redden, and, you know, ultimately he might drop out of the team on Saturday against Coventry because of that performance. And we know Wilder did rotate his strikers more than any other position when he was at Sheffield United, largely because he liked to mix things up in the absence of a prolific goal scorer. So we could well see that change, but that'll only motivate Connolly more to make sure next time he's in, you know, he's better than that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Wilder will set the standards and these players have to meet them. Dom, we've
just very quickly, just to jump in on that, just a small point. I don't think last night changes anything we talked about in last week's pod, where, you know, but if something becomes available, Wilder wants to bring in one more, and, you know, he'll have his ideas on what areas need strengthening. But for me, if the window closes tomorrow, forget exits, but in terms of incomings, if the window closed tomorrow, it had been a hugely successful window to bring in two centre forwards, young, hungry. As Craig said, obviously Connolly wasn't at his best last night, but that, you can't be writing a player off after one game in only his second game for a new club away to the form team or the second form team in the league. And obviously Riley McGree, we haven't seen yet, who looks an excellent signing, as well as the two young lads. So I don't think, for me, if the window closed tomorrow, it'd be a hugely successful window. And last night might have sharpened minds in terms of what needs to happen on the training pitch in the next few days. But I can't imagine last night will have changed Borough's thinking at all in terms of what happened in the remaining days of the window.
Yeah, totally agree with that. We've got, I was going to say that, Dom, we've got this question here from
Mark.
And he says, in his opinion, he feels Middlesbrough has been sussed out a little in the last two games with Jones being the only creative threat. Is that a fair opinion, do you think?
Yeah, I think it is. I agree with Mark there. I think at times last night, Borough looked a bit one-dimensional. And, you know, I wonder whether maybe they haven't, obviously Neil Taylor isn't Isaiah Jones. He's a wing-back, isn't he? Or a defender who's playing in a wing-back. But I do think Taylor has a lot to offer on that side. But, yeah, I think Borough looked a bit unbalanced last night. And the midfield looked a bit safe. The balance of that midfield's been great, hasn't it? But the dynamic of that midfield three didn't quite work. But that said, you know, Blackburn did a job on Borough, didn't they, as well? So it's not just a case of Borough not being at the best. But I agree with that with Jones. Yeah, I think there's an element of you know, he still looked, even though he was the one who Borough were looking at all the time. And Blackburn obviously did a good job of containing him. He still looked for his most likely route to goal, didn't he?
Yeah, I'd completely agree with that as well. I think, you know, as Mark points out, Blackburn kind of highlighted and clearly did the research and saw that Isaiah Jones was the threat for Borough and looked to stop that. And as Dom says, even doing that, he still looked the most likely and most threatening Borough player on the pitch. One thing, you know, again, when we look at Wilder's Sheffield United side, they liked to play the ball in kind of intricate little triangles. And we're already seeing that at Borough in terms of Matt Crooks, Isaiah Jones, and then whoever's the right striker, right-sided striker, which is usually Andras Borrar. They attempt to link up quite well, and that right-hand side has looked quite good so far. Crooks and Jones, I thought, linked up again last night, as I say, despite the extra attention. They linked up well. Sometimes Anthony Dykesdale gets involved in that as well as the right-sided centre-back. However, on the left-hand side, and I think this goes back to when we were talking about Watmore, how important he was in the early part of those games. He runs those channels, and he has so much energy. The last two games with Aaron Connolly in, that left-hand side hasn't looked quite as good for Borough. Neil Taylor, you know, we know he did have COVID, so perhaps, you know, there was, you know, there's a kind of, you know, repercussions of that, perhaps. But he hasn't quite looked as good as what he did when he first came into the side, Neil Taylor, lately. Marcus Tavernier, I still thought he was, you know, he's quite often the fall guy, if you like, the one who gets it, Marcus Tavernier. I thought out of the three over on that left-hand side, he was the one most trying to make things happen. He was the one trying to be bright. But, you know, every time, you know, the couple of times he played it, Neil Taylor would miss control, or, you know, his pass back to him wasn't excellent. And as I've mentioned with Connolly, his kind of flicks and things like that just weren't coming off at all night. And, you know, since Watmore came out of that little triangle on the left-hand side, that left-hand side hasn't looked as good. And as you say, teams are going to do the homework. It's not hard. Isaiah Jones is, you know, so bright and so piercy, so dangerous. So it's not hard to just pay a little extra attention to Isaiah Jones. What Middlesbrough need when teams are paying that little bit of attention to Isaiah Jones is to then find other ways and other areas of the pitch where they can then hurt them. And you know, that tends to be the opposite flank. So absolutely, I think I agree with Mark. Borough need to step up on the left-hand side, and do, the left-hand side needs to do their bit to support the right-hand side.
I mean, in terms of that, the creativity, we've had a lot of talk about players who might drop in and out, but one name that is popping up a lot in the comments is Piero. Craig, what does he do to get a game? Or as Andrew Aiken asks, is his future no longer at the club?
I certainly don't think we're anywhere close to that kind of point, his future not being at the club. One always speaks, you know, positively about him. He's had a frustrating time. He was injured when Wilder first came in, and since then, of course, you know, Matt Crooks has played so well in that central midfield position, which is ultimately, you know, the player Martin Piero is challenging, you know, that right-sided eight, if you like. And, you know, I've asked about Martin Piero just a week or so ago now, and you know, that was the answer, that ultimately he has to just keep doing what he's doing and wait for his opportunity, because ultimately, you know, last night was bad, but I actually thought Matt Crooks, as I say, linked well with Isaiah Jones and was one of Borough's better players. He missed that sitter right at the end, but he got himself into that position, and of course, the game before that against Redden, although it probably wasn't his better game. He finished the game with two goals and was the hero who won the game for Borough. So, you know, ultimately, we can look into things too much, or you can just look at the simple picture and black and white as it is. The player ahead of Martin Piero in the team has been doing well. So, you know, in what was an eight-game unbeaten run, how can you justify taking Matt Crooks out?
It's certainly a good dilemma to have, I guess, as well. As people that are in there on the starting team sheet playing well enough, and then people out there, you know, on the training pitch performing well and trying to impress the manager. It's a great dilemma to have, you know, who you're going to pick. Dom, we've mentioned there that we're probably done in terms of people coming in up front, but in terms of other incomings in the last few days of the window, can you see any movement?
As we talked about last week, I look at up front and midfield, and I'd be very surprised. I mean, you know, to think you were talking about that competition for midfield places there, and that's with Riley McGree not in the squad. Now, given everything we know about McGree and how pleased Borough are to have got him, you know, you suspect he's going to be a key player, and you would imagine that he's going to go above Piero in that pecking order. As you say, that's the type of competition you want. I wonder whether there may be a centre-half, you know, you one injury away from, I mean, you know, you've got Bamba there and you've got Nathan Wood and you've got Grant Hall, who hasn't had a kick either. I mean, you look at Hall and you wonder whether if you had an offer, whether they'd think about that one. But I suppose it depends who's coming in. And at right wing back, you know, if Jones got injured, you know, you're looking pretty short there, really, aren't you? There's no natural deputy. You could move Dyke Steele over and bring one of the centre halves in, but Dyke Steele for me is at home in that position. He's playing now the right side of a back three. And then there's the issue that we talked about last week, the goalkeeper. I think that's probably the one area of the squad you look at the minute and think, as Craig alluded to last week, I don't think any of the keepers have really staked a claim to be nailed on number one. You know, Sol Brink came back, but we got the impression that was, you know, he was coming back as the number three. How easy is it to buy a goalkeeper in January? You know, someone who's going to come in as a number one. I'd be more surprised than if Borough didn't sign a goalkeeper. I'd be more surprised if Borough did sign a goalkeeper who came in as number one. I think that's a summer, a summer job, really, looking at working on that department then. So it's a difficult one. I think, as I say, cover at right wing back, maybe a defender, but I think Borough are in a position now where if they did know more business, it's a successful window. But I'd expect it to be busy in terms of outgoings. You know, Wilder made that clear, didn't he, Craig, when you spoke to him last week, that you need to do that to balance the books. Marcus Brown, Uche Piezu, obviously we know James Lee Saliki as well. And then you suspect a few youngsters will go out on loan as well. So you would think there's going to be at least a handful of exits before the month is out.
Yeah, I completely agree with Dom there. I don't think there's much I can add to that in terms of incomings. The only position I would say potentially as well would be another signed Riley McGree and Boyd Munts this month as midfielders, but potentially the defensive midfield role that Johnny Howson currently occupies. You know, again, it's one of them. And when Wilder spoke about kind of incomings and he's you know, looked at the balance of his squad, he's always said that he does feel that, you know, he's not going to have like for like in every position. He's not going to be able to carry those numbers. He doesn't want to carry those numbers. There will be certain areas of the pitch where players can cover, even if that's not their exact natural position. So, you know, I think that could be a position he might look to strengthen. He might look to bring someone in as backup to Howson. But equally, you know, we've seen when was it Blackpool? Wasn't it? That Johnny Howson missed and Paddy McNair stepped up into the midfield and Saul Bamba came in the defence. So, you know, there are those kind of areas in the pitch, like right wing back, like defensive midfield, that, you know, potentially they could bring in what I would say you'd be calling backup players, but there are other players in the squad that they currently have that they could, you know, they can cover when they need to cover. So they're not priority, you know, things as such.
Just to jump in there, just quickly, I think there's a difficulty, isn't there, in buying a cover player as well. Bringing someone in when, you know, if they're coming in and they, you know, they only have to look if they're coming in as a holding midfield player and think, well, hold on, Wilder only plays with one and the captain plays in that role, who he's not going to play. So yeah, I look at that. I completely agree, by the way, Craig. I do think that's an area. But in terms of the type of player, you wonder whether it's kind of players at either end of the career, really, either someone who comes in as a young player on loan or someone at the back end of the career who Wilder perhaps knows has managed previously and comes in, you know, to kind of knows exactly what Wilder wants, settling into Wilder knows what type of character he is. And Wilder can be absolutely clear in saying, look, you're not going to play every week, but I need someone here. I need you to come in and do this and do that. So it wouldn't surprise me if we saw someone maybe completely way off the mark. But if that was an area Wilder looked to strengthen, it wouldn't surprise me if he looked at someone who was maybe managed previously, who comes in and plays in that cover role.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, there's a lot of excitement from fans about the signing of McCrea, obviously, arrived from Birmingham. We're yet to see him yet. I mean, how crucial of a role do you think he's going to play in potentially getting Middlesbrough to the Premier League?
I think it'll be really interesting to see, you know, how big a role he does play. Clearly, this boy has a lot of talent, but he is still a young boy. And we should remember he was part of a Birmingham City team. You know, they raved about him, but they're a struggling Birmingham City team as well. Now, from what I've been told, you know, he came in the early training sessions. He looked absolutely brilliant. He really, really caught the eye. And, you know, a couple of the players in interviews since have mentioned how the new boys have kind of really drove the standards of training up with how good they've looked since coming in. Of course, McCrea is currently away on international duty. So that's delayed his debut. And so the earliest we'll be able to see him in action is the Manchester United FA Cup game. But even that might be pushing it a bit, I think. Off the top of my head, I think he plays on the Monday night for Australia and then would have to fly back and to be involved against Manchester United on the Friday night. So that might be pushing it a little, and QPR in the midweek after that might be more realistic. But, you know, I think, again, he's ultimately going to be challenging Marcus Tavernier. It's going to be that left-sided number eight role. And I appreciate there's probably a lot of excitement about McCrea because, again, Marcus Tavernier just seems to be this kind of, for so many fans, he's this decisive figure, and so many don't seem to appreciate how much he does in the team. But I think, much like Piero on the right side of that central midfield, McCrea is going to, in the very first instance, have to work his way into that team because Chris Wilder clearly likes Marcus Tavernier and clearly values what he brings to the team. You know, there was the interesting interview after the Reading game on BBC Tees where, you know, he kind of said that he was delighted with Tavernier after Tav provided the assist for the equaliser, and Mark Drury from Tees had kind of said, you know, he does get a lot of stick, does Tav, and Chris Wilder had said, I know he does, but listen, Tav's a good player. I know a good player when I say one, and Tav is a good player. So clearly, you know, it's clear that Chris Wilder likes him. Previous managers have liked him. I appreciate he's not every Middlesbrough fan's cup of tea, but he brings a lot to that Middlesbrough midfield. And I think more than any other player, you usually notice when Tav's missing. So, yeah, McCrea's first kind of job is to try and displace Tavernier, which won't be easy.
Which again plays into that whole element of competition. I mean, that's a massive part of a good side, isn't it? To have options, and if someone isn't performing too well or even just gets kicked out of the side because the other person's performing better in training, that's what you want and that's what Wilder will want. We will finish then. I'll come to you first, Dom. Let's talk about the game against Coventry. I mean, they were up there. They've had a bit of a bad run of form recently. They've only won two in their last 10. They've fallen out of the picture ever so slightly. But, you know, they're still a decent side. Borough need a response from what happened last night against Blackburn. Do you foresee any changes being made? Craig mentioned there about the rotation of strikers, so that might play an element. But any major changes being made to the starting lineup, do you think?
I think other than the tinkering of strikers, maybe one, maybe Conley, you know, I know without being overly critical, but that's the obvious change, isn't it? You'd think, given everything Craig said about Wilder's history in rotating his centre forwards. After that Preston game, when he was pretty strong, wasn't he, talking about them being arrogant and hating the second half attitude, went to Huddersfield next, and he had every opportunity then to ring the changes, and he didn't. Did he make one? Did Pelletier come in for that game, which was forced? Anyway, there was certainly no more than that. Now, obviously, the difference is now he's got a bigger squad and he's got more options. But even then, I look and I think the only real likelihood is changing one. I'd be surprised if he changed both strikers, one striker. But equally, it wouldn't surprise me at all if you know, he gave him a bit of a rollicking, he gave him a bit of a rocket, and then said, right, go on, same team, prove me wrong, show me, you know, give me the reaction that I want. And as I said right at the start, I'd expect Borough to respond. You know, Coventry are a good team. I think Mark Robbins is one of the most underrated managers probably in the country. You know, the job he's done there at Coventry to get them up when they had no one in, playing at St Andrews, and to keep them up last year and to even have them in the conversation of the top six for the first half of this season. I'm surprised, really, that he hasn't been looked at, or he might have been, but he hasn't. There hasn't been more firm approaches from other clubs. But that said, I do fancy Borough to respond, and I think they'll bounce back with a win. And you've got to, really, haven't you? Because it's QPR after that in the league, which is another really tough test. So you do need to kind of respond and you know, find that momentum again, get the run going again.
Craig, do you foresee a response coming?
Yeah, absolutely, I do. I think, as Dom says there, I think, you know, we saw a response after Preston, and I would imagine that those players, you know, I don't think that those players are bad players. They haven't become bad players overnight. They're still the same players that took Borough on an unbeaten 8-game run, 5 straight wins. I think they had a bad night. I do. Obviously, that'll be the real test now. They have to prove that that's the case. You know, they have to, against Coventry, prove that this was just a blip and not a derailment. But I do. I feel like, you know, like Dom says, it'll prove that kind of kick up the backside, if you like. Maybe we did get a bit ahead of ourselves. You know, maybe we did get a bit cocky. But, you know, when Coventry come to the Riverside, I expect right from the off, they'll be going for it.
Fantastic. Well, fingers crossed they do get 3 points. That is the end of Tribe Supper.
Just before we wrap up. Well, firstly, sorry for my soundtrack that's accompanied me on today's podcast.
I was just going to mention the comments are 100% spot on. It is a dreadful playlist.
I can't hear it, unfortunately. I've got these on, so I can't. So apologies for that. But also, before we wrap up, I think only right that we give a shout out as well to the 3 Borough Medical staff last night, Dr. Tom Pritchard, Adam Reid, and Chris Mosley, who, you know, sprang into action, were first responders as a Blackburn Rovers fan, took ill at the game last night. The 3 of those, as I'm told, the fan wasn't breathing when they were the first 3 on the scene. The fan wasn't breathing, and they managed to get him breathing again, and then were assisted by Blackburn medical staff and the medical staff in working for Blackburn for the supporters as well. So you know, just a big shout out to those 3 at Middlesbrough FC. Fantastic credit to the club, and you know, it sounds like thankfully that supporter, that elderly supporter, is in a stable condition. You know, has lived to tell the tale, thankfully, and a big part of that doubt of those 3 Borough medical staff. So a shout out to them.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah,
absolutely, well said.
Yeah, and fingers crossed, as we say there, that the fan makes a full recovery. Now, I said that is the end of this episode of Tribe Supper. If you head over to Gazette Live, you can keep up with all the latest Middlesbrough FC news, including all the build-up to Saturday's game of Coventry and any transfer updates as well. Please remember to like and follow the podcast, which is totally free to do. Just means with every new episode we upload, you'll get a notification to say it's ready for you guys to listen to. We'll be back next week, hopefully with 3 points on the board for Middlesbrough. In the meantime, I hope you enjoy the rest of your week. Like I say, do head over to the website.